Isn't this a sports show?
Here are seven incredible sex positions we can't wait to show Jesus when he finally returns to Earth.
Almost entirely.
Oh, can I get an amen?
Amen!
Good work, Beards.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Me and my housemates were taking, like, family photos around the dumpster because it was really just very fitting.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
Curtis might have said the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me in my life. He said, the more, like, ridiculous what you're wearing is, the less ridiculous it seems on you. And that is something that I've been waiting to hear for so long.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at JB Briscoe.
You're the best, Josh. Appreciate it, man.
Oh, I said I'm the best. Love talking to him. I would have said that even if he didn't say that I was the best. But that's sort of a symbiotic relationship there. He said, I think he's the best. No, Brandon, you're the best. Okay, I'm the best.
On ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome in, Almost Entirely Sports. Friday edition. Happy Red Friday. Happy divisional football game just around the corner. Happy good Thursday night football game. The Rams and Niners combined for like 80 points last night. I saw that it was the Rams and the Niners. So I watched Rick and Morty last night. And then I got a couple of notifications on my phone that just said like, Sammy Watkins has scored a touchdown in your fantasy league. Sammy Watkins has scored a touchdown in your fantasy league. So I was not anywhere near prepared for that Thursday night football rampage that was happening last night. The thing I am ready for, though, and the crux of today's show the whole way through, the Chiefs and Chargers on Sunday go to battle in a soccer stadium in Los Angeles in a market that is so desperate to do anything other than watch the Chargers that I think there's going to be a lot of red in that stadium come Sunday. An afternoon game also, in case you were wondering. 3:25 local start. I'm excited for this game. I can't even say it's the second biggest test of this Chiefs season, because I'm not sure that it is. It's another difficult game. I think the line opened at Chiefs -3, which would be to say Chiefs -6 at a neutral site and Chiefs -9 at home, which would, I think that would have gotten adjusted down. That's kind of the rule of thumb. I am looking at this game as a real, real challenge for the Chiefs, going to play a team that is currently being underrated because of their record. They were a blocked field goal away from taking the Broncos into overtime in Denver. They were a missed field goal away from beating the Dolphins last week. The Chargers are maybe a snake-bitten football team, but they're not a bad football team by any means whatsoever. So I'm looking ahead to this Sunday thinking, man, this is a real tough challenge for this team. And then they go, oh, well, they beat a better team at home last week, and the week before that, they went on the road and started off this NFL season by upsetting the Super Bowl champions in New England on their, like, Super Bowl banner unveiling day, kicked off by Mark Wahlberg talking about how great Boston and the New England area is. They go, oh, yeah, the Chiefs have been here and beyond already this season. So for all of the challenges that I think Phillip Rivers and Keenan Allen and Melvin Gordon are going to bring, for all the challenges that Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa are going to bring on the other side of the ball, I don't know how you can be really terrified of this game. It's absolutely losable. And in a vacuum, I think this is going to be one of the tightest games this week. But in the context of what the Chiefs have done already, it seems kind of silly to go, oh man, I'm not sure they're going to be able to handle this. What are you pointing out on your TV, Beards?
Around the horn, the talking point at the moment is, should NFL consider moving the team back to San Diego?
Oh my, we're 2 weeks in.
Yep. Also, here's my one talking point about Chiefs Chargers.
Okay.
Have the Chargers replaced their kicker?
No.
Then the Chiefs are going to win.
Well, the Denver game wasn't even his fault. The Denver game, his kick got blocked.
That is kind of his fault, though.
He made it the first time, and the offensive line got whipped. Sometimes having a blocked kick is the kicker's fault. It wasn't really intended. But Like, the Chiefs have a clear advantage there. Like, you've got a kicker whose confidence is shook right now. You've got a quarterback who's perpetually living in NFL purgatory where he is always getting the ball with a minute and a half and no timeouts left, down by 5 points, and has to go 80 yards. Phillip Rivers has been doing that his entire career. And if Phillip Rivers was in Eli Manning's shoes, or if he was in Tony Romo's shoes in Dallas, we would probably be talking about Phil Rivers as a surefire Hall of Famer. But he's been in San Diego. Now he's in L.A. on these teams that keep getting hurt and keep losing in these ridiculous ways.
And maybe going back to San Diego, apparently.
And could be going back to San Diego. It's not going to happen. They're at least going to get both of those teams in the new stadium, whenever that is. That's at least one full year, though, right?
Are they even building the stadium yet?
I have no idea. That's a good research project for the next, like,
five
minutes.
Like that'd take more than a year.
I think they broke ground on it already. I think they broke ground on it whenever they announced that the Rams were going there. I can't remember.
I'll look it up.
Thank you. Beards and Fly here today, by the way.
First headline, NFL's new stadium delayed.
Perfect. Fantastic. They're going to try to have L.A. be New York, but L.A. is not New York. Do you know what you do if you're a sports fan in New York in the winter? You either go to the stadium or you watch your games from inside. You know what you do in L.A. during the winter? You go to the beach. I don't know. You know what I don't understand? I don't understand how Florida has three teams. That baffles me. I know it's bigger than Los Angeles, but what did you find, Beards?
I found that it's been delayed till 2020, and not only that, but they have the Super Bowl there in 2021. Hopefully.
Wow.
Potentially.
Great. Yeah, this is going to be rough. The Chargers and the Rams are going to have some really rough times for these next few years. But I really do think at this point, in fact, I can already hear the tweets. It's like, oh, you're Phillip Rivers would have been a Hall of Famer in New York. Where are you? You're afraid of the Chargers? What are you afraid of? The game suddenly being decided by who can miss more field goals? Yuck, 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 yuck. And really, I think that underestimating this team would be a massive overcorrection. Now, were we over-optimistic about what the Chargers could be this year? Sure. Brandon Kiley, who we'll hear from sometime, probably next to get a hold of him again, he said he thought the Chargers would win the division. I had the Chargers being better than the Broncos. I had the Chargers at third in the division. But again, they've gotten largely very unlucky. Now, again, also their play calling has been bland and predictable. Their defense hasn't been too terrifying. They got ripped up by Trevor Siemian for a little while. But then Jamal Charles fumbles, Siemian throws a pick. They get themselves back in the game. I'll say this. I think the Chiefs have a really solid recipe for beating the Chargers, even if they play like a worse version of themselves. Like, yeah, this is why I think the Chiefs are going to not a lock in this game. I don't want to say they're a lock in this game at all, because the NFL has very, very few of those. But the reason that I'm pretty confident what the Chiefs are going to be doing here is that even if they regress, even if we see the Chiefs' worst game of the start of this season, if we see the third place game of these first 3 weeks, I still think that a devolved version of the Chiefs is going to be able to handle the Los Angeles Chargers. Because Trevor Siemian did it. That Broncos offense is a devolved version of the Chiefs offense. They got a couple of good playmakers. You know, CJ Anderson, he's not, this is a very loose comparison, but give me the creative license, please. CJ Anderson is a devolved Kareem Hunt. He can have some big effective days, but I'm not terrified of him, and if I was a defense, I'd be pretty scared of Kareem Hunt. But he can produce to that level on one of Kareem Hunt's down days. Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, again, very loose comparisons. But Demaryius Thomas is a big physical weapon that looked really great with Peyton Manning. He's one of the most fearsome wide receivers in football. If you get him a quarterback that's going to use him appropriately, you can make Demaryius Thomas. Did I call him Demaryius Sanders a second ago? I feel like there's a chance that I did. I hope I didn't. The Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, I'm afraid I made them one monster combined. But
I'll check during the break.
Great. You have Demaryius Thomas, this big physical weapon that I think best compares to Travis Kelce on the Chiefs side here. You've got Emmanuel Sanders, this shifty wide receiver who is capable of being a number one receiver, but is, you know, very fast, very quick, very elusive. At this point, Tyreek Hill's a better receiver than Emmanuel Sanders is, but there's a comparison to be had there. That'll make sense. Again, I am doing some very fast and loose math on that. But you can draw those comparisons. Trevor Siemian does a lot of the same things that scared Alex Smith does. Right now, we don't seem to be getting a whole lot of scared Alex Smith. He sacked himself once. He got rattled a little bit against the Eagles. But we're not getting much scared Alex Smith. We're getting pretty ballsy Alex Smith right now. But even scared Alex Smith beat the Chargers in week one. Scared Alex Smith plus poor man's Tyreek Hill plus Demaryius Thomas, which is sort of like slash poor man's Travis Kelce plus poor man's Kareem Hunt. Again, I cannot emphasize this enough, fast and loose math, fast and loose comparison. But especially at the quarterback position, that's what I see the Broncos being. I see them being a poor man's Chiefs offense, frankly, with a very similar defense. Von Miller, Justin Houston, Aqib Talib, and Chris Harris, Marcus Peters. Obviously, the Chiefs don't have that Eric Berry advantage anymore. But maybe Ron Parker helps account for the Chris Harris thing. This isn't going to be a comparing the Chiefs to the Broncos show. But I do all of this to say, I think we've already seen the Chargers play a devolved Chiefs team this year. And the devolved Chiefs team ended up winning. Barely. They almost got taken in overtime. But they won the game. And also, it was in Denver. In devolved Arrowhead, am I right? Up top. It was in Denver. It's an advantage the Chiefs aren't going to have this week, but I'm not too terrified of what the LA Galaxy Stadium is going to bring to the Chiefs to really rattle Alex Smith. I'm pretty confident that he'll do okay. So I'm feeling pretty good about the Chiefs, especially offensively. And Melvin Ingram, I'm going to make that mistake a lot today. Will Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa get to Alex Smith a couple of times? Yeah. Will the threat of those guys caving in the ends rattle Alex Smith? Probably so. But I feel all right about that. Now, there's no Mitch Morse and there's no Parker Anger. Mitch Morse is officially out. Anger is officially doubtful. They're not playing. So it's going to be Witzman and Zach Fulton in those spots. Brian Witzman's been playing this whole season and all of training camp and everything, waiting for Parker Anger to get back. But I think that the more malleable pieces of this Chiefs offensive line is going to be in the middle, especially for Witzman and Fulton. And I am a fan of Zach Fulton. I've been a fan of Zach Fulton since the draft. I don't know how I ended up being a fan of, I think, a sixth-round pick out of Tennessee as a guard. I don't know when that happened or how that happened, but I liked him from the beginning quite a lot, and I still do. I think he's proved my optimism to be well invested. But I'm also not afraid of anything that the Chargers are doing in the middle. Anywhere, frankly. In fact, I think the Chiefs are going to be able to run the ball on LA pretty well. You can look at what they have, again, in the middle of that defense. I'm literally reading a depth chart right now, so you can, you know, do what you will with this. Corey Toomer, Jatavius Brown. And they've got kind of a weird defensive setup, but this defense does not worry me. Jahlil Adai and Casey Hayward in the secondary, a couple of names that might ring a bell. None of those are names that strike you with any fear. Corey Legent in the middle also is somebody that can cause a little trouble. Brandon Meebane, again, another guy whose name sticks out, but he's been in the league for a dozen years. those are both guys that you say, all right, well, maybe they'll keep Zach Fulton's hands full, Brian Witzman's hands full, LDT's hands full. But with how well Laurent Duvernay-Tardif has been playing, I think you're going to see a lot of him being kind of left alone on an island as Fulton's attention goes to helping Brian Witzman and setting up that interior offensive line, to get giving help to Witzman, letting LDT deal with his own handfuls of Brandon Mabane and Corey Leggett. A couple of names that I will say differently every time I say them. Mabane, Leggett, Leggett. It's almost a video game character. I think the Chiefs are going to manage that interior offensive line matchup. The edges are where the real harassment is going to come. Melvin Ingram, Joey Bosa. Those are real NFL pass rushers. But the Chiefs have real NFL tackles. I think Eric Fisher, Mitchell Schwartz on those edges are going to be able to hold up their end of the bargain. Alex Smith has to be aware of what's coming from, again, a pretty talented potential pass rush there. But this Chiefs offensive line has been really good. They had a lot of trouble. They had their hands very much full last week against the Eagles. But what was the end result of that? And I was critical of Alex with a couple of times for holding the ball too long or for taking sacks whenever he should have gotten the ball out of his hand. But what was the result last week? A very high completion percentage game from Alex Smith. A few sacks. All of them relatively harmless. Alex Smith knew whenever he was getting beat, nothing catastrophic ever came from it. I think we're going to see that handled very, very similarly on Sunday. And there's nobody on this defense that's going to be able to manage all of the matchup problems that the Chiefs have. I don't know really why I started with the offensive line. I guess because the defensive line is the best strength that the Chargers have to bring to the table, especially Bosa and Ingram as pass rushers. But looking out at the skill positions, no one on this defense can keep up with Tyreek Hill. No one on this defense has the size-speed combination to keep up with Travis Kelce. And as those guys get safety help devoted to them, Kareem Hunt starts shredding up this whole defense. I think the Chiefs are going to have a pretty nice offensive day here compared to the general expectation. I don't think they're going to hang 40. But the Chargers held the Dolphins to like 17 points, something like that. I'll figure it out precisely here in just like 30 seconds. But I think the Chargers defense is a perfectly fine unit. Yeah, 17 points to the Dolphins. And I think the Chiefs will put up, and only 24 in the loss to the Broncos in Denver. I think the Chiefs will put up 24 to 32 points in this game. I'll probably drop you right at 27 or so. That's what I did last week and ended up being right. And again, the Chiefs did that against a good team, a good front seven, a stout defense that seemed to give them some problems that they eventually just sort of busted through. I feel good about that. Too many skilled position players here, too much for Andy Reid to scheme with. And this is a time now when I simply feel good about what Andy Reid's going to do. I think it was Seth Kizer who's on Twitter today talking about how Andy Reid seems to be sort of like reaching, not critical mass, that's not the right way to put it, maybe terminal velocity. Don't make it an Andy Reid fat joke, Beards. I saw you laughing when I said critical mass. Andy Reid's lost weight. It's not a fat joke. Don't make that no liner. But it, in an even terminal velocity is not the perfect phrasing for it. But it seems like Andy Reid has sort of just now gotten up to full speed because now he has the weapons. And I tend to agree with that. That he's been moving in this direction for a while, but he's had a hard time without a number one receiver. He's had Travis Kelce, but what else? And I think Jeremy Macklin could have been used much better, but he missed some pieces of last season. Spencer Ware did some really good things, but Kareem Hunt and Tyreek Hill in year two are going to next levels. Travis Kelce looks as good as it's ever been. Next levels. The offensive line looks as good as it's been since Andy Reid has been in Kansas City. By a pretty solid margin. Next levels. Maybe hitting his stride is a good way to put it for Andy Reid. He's a guy who's finally fully hitting his stride. And he also now has the full array of weapons. I feel much better about the offense at this point than I did at any point last season. All right, we'll take a break. And whenever we come back, we'll look at the other side of the ball, how the Chiefs defense is going to hold up against Philip Rivers and company. If you have any questions or any concerns, anything at all that you have about this game that's currently just on your heart, you know, that's really giving you some sort of pause, you can tweet me at JB Briscoe, throw out anything out there, or hit up the comment sections on the Facebook Live page. Looks like a few people have done that already. We'll get there coming up next. You can also call the show if you want. It's on the Facebook Live thing. It's on the tattered piece of paper that I have up kind of on the window so I can read it because I forget that it's 913-491-8255. It's 913 Tyler Thigpen, Tambaha Lee, Dwayne Bowe, D4. There we go. I wanted to make Tyler Thigpen Tyler Palco for a second, but Tyler Palco also might have worn number 4. I feel like I'm seeing Palco 4 in my head right now. I was going to go to break and say we'd find that out next, but Beards went to the computer right away.
Number 4.
Booyah!
The only number he wore.
Booyah! So, Tyler Thigpen, Tyler Palco, whatever it is. Tyler, Tamba, Dwayne D. Speaking of D4, we're going to talk about him next.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
1510 AM, 99.3 FM, 1510.com, all the podcasts. Now, Facebook Live and the TuneIn app. There are 6 different ways people can watch the show, can consume this show. Did I just start a motorcycle?
With Joshua Briscoe. On ESPN Kansas City.
Speaking of all those different ways you can consume the show, Almost Entirely Sports on iTunes, everywhere you can get your podcasts. Live right now on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, 1510.com. The TuneIn app is there. But the Facebook live stream has a few distinct advantages that have been pointed out to me on the Facebook page. Eddie says that Facebook Live sounds way better than TuneIn. Hashtag watching from South Carolina. Thank you, Eddie. And Andrew says, also, there's no Beards cam on TuneIn. Beards give the people what they want. Also, the Beards cam today, looking good. We've solved some lighting
issues. It
actually
looks better now.
Yeah. I mean, it's still your face, but like other than that, it looks fine.
I have the face for radio.
You have the face for a beard is what you have. Which is convenient.
It does kind of help.
It just works. Seeing you, I don't think I've ever seen you clean shaven.
I haven't been clean shaven probably in 6 years.
It terrifies me. But I just thought of this. This is a great idea. At some point, if we ever have something we disagree on strongly enough to have a bet on, your payment would be going completely clean shaven for. For whatever it is that you would be wrong about.
I can see that happening.
Yeah, that's a good bet. I would love to see just what that would look like.
Very baby-faced.
Yeah, I would imagine you would look 14. Also, RJ had a really good tweet earlier. I'm guessing this is the same RJ. I can't imagine there are that many RJs listening to the show. I'm going to read a couple tweets from earlier on later on today. The tweets were earlier today. Later on in the show, I'm going to read a couple of tweets. RJ said he can't find the show on TuneIn. So if you're looking for the show on the TuneIn app, go to download the TuneIn app and then search ESPN 1510. It still has the old branding, which makes sense. It's only been ESPN Kansas City for what, a year and a half? And if you search for the show name specifically, you're never going to find it. The 1510.com still has all of the wrong information for this entire station. this whole station's lineup on 1510.com is dead wrong. But we like almost entirely sports is on the website now, but it says it's from 4 to 5 p.m., which is just not true. Actually, you know what? That might have been slanderous. Let's check and see. Last time I checked, it said, oh, yep, still wrong. But I tell you what, you're gonna get the truest information on the Facebook live stream. I would love for eventually the most like popular way of consuming the show to be the Facebook live stream, just because I think we're gonna do some really fun stuff with it.
We've gotten some good numbers from that recently.
We have. Thank you for saying we have immediately after I said we have.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's a really good place for engagement, not like marriages. I mean, I guess if you wanted to get married on Facebook Live, you could. But it's a really good medium for show audience interaction, even better than Twitter. I really like it. A couple of the tweets from earlier today that I wanted to make sure we got to. Bryce tweeted in and said, you killed the hypocrisy piece yesterday. We talked about the NFL's hypocrisy with their themed months. You can find that again on the iTunes, not iTunes, anywhere you find podcasts. If you search Almost Entirely Sports. He said, also, I have a fever. The only cure, more bananas and pajamas. Hashtag stay weird, hashtag stay woke. And then RJ said, keep up the great work. Probably my favorite Chiefs/sports podcast I've come across since Nick Wright was on the air, which I take to be a very kind compliment, because there's a lot of very good stuff, on radio in Kansas City, and there has been since Nick Wright. And also David tweets in and says, I thought you'd say on this show you'd be talking more Chiefs. Hey, David, go to hell. I really appreciate all the interaction we get from everybody. The audience interaction is my favorite part. David, you can burn in a fire.
That escalated quickly. I was going to say that we don't just read nice tweets about us.
Oh, no.
I was going to say that we would read the bad ones, but there just weren't any. And then you pulled that one out. Way to ruin my joke, Josh.
Sorry. Twitter moves faster than either of us. And I think that David's probably being lightheartedly sarcastic about it. We talked a lot about
Chiefs. I would hope so. Otherwise, we just kind of sent him to hell.
I don't actually have that power. I can't actually send someone to hell. I can tell them to go there. They don't have to listen. Not David. David's a friend. It's ridiculous. What we do here is absurd. I love it. All right, so I said at the end of the last segment that whenever we came back, we would talk about the other side of the ball for Chiefs-Chargers on Sunday. I feel pretty good about Andy Reid versus the Chargers' defense. The other side of it, I think, is going to bring a lot of very interesting matchups. Again, kind of a thing you've got to know to understand how the Chiefs' defense works. Marcus Peters stays on his side of the field. Terrence Mitchell stays on his side of the field. Phil Gaines is going to be playing the slot almost entirely. Not a plug for the show. So I expect to see that all obviously hold firm. There's a lot of utility work being done by Ron Parker at all times. Daniel Sorensen and Eric Murray are still working in rotation to replace the loss of Eric Berry. The defense on Sunday against the Eagles was kind of jittery. Out of the gate there, Ron Parker settled everybody down, and then it performed much better. I don't think the Chiefs are going to have that problem for the rest of the season, frankly, that, oh, how do we do this without Eric Berry? I think that they're going to be in good shape now. So I feel good about the defense in all of those ways. The pass rush, the defensive line, Justin Houston, has been so stupendous, and I know we've talked about this a bunch of different times already this year, because it deserves to be talked about. The Chris Jones, Allen Bailey, Benny Logan front line is spectacular. And whenever Justin Houston gets to the quarterback, it's chaos. It's just chaos. And in-run defense is also absolutely stupendous. Also keeping in mind that Chris Jones only played, 44% of the snaps for the defense last week when he won Defensive Player of the Week in the AFC. he did that on very limited snaps because he's still coming back from his injury that kept him out of all of training camp. I told you before the season that Chris Jones would be one of the most impactful players on this team as long as he's healthy. That jump from year one to year two is going to be huge, and it looks like it's going to be. But Raheem Nunez-Roches also got a ton of snaps last week, and he's also looked very, very good. These are all guys who can hold their own and run defense in a big way. The only flaw I see in this front seven is Dee Ford, and it's really disheartening to be at this place still this far into his career. But one of the key matchups to watch this week is going to be Melvin Gordon running in Dee Ford's general direction. He just can't deal with stopping the run. I don't know if there's a mental block in there somewhere, or if he just gets whooped on whenever he has an offensive lineman running at him. But if the run goes in his direction, he is going to be at the disadvantage literally every time. And the guy who's technically behind him on the depth chart is Tano Passanio, a guy that I don't think would have that problem, but he doesn't get out there. I'm assuming it's because he still has a lot to learn in the way of the defensive scheming and how you cover the pass in that situation. But if Dee Ford were to get a hurt, I assume that Tano Passanio would be the guy on the field more, but we haven't seen any of that yet. That's something, though, that I do worry about, and I do definitely have some concern for. But it seems like we may see the Chiefs' debut of Reggie Ragland. Mitch Morse and Parker Anger are the only two guys who are not playing this week. Justin Houston missed a practice with an illness. He was back today. But it seems like Reggie Ragland may be poised to make his Chiefs debut, and I hope he only does if he is actually ready to go, and maybe it's a very soft launch for Reggie Ragland. But if he does end up being out there, he's going to be a guy that's really going to help out this run defense. So maybe we'll see some instances whenever there's more Ragland and less Dee Ford, where it's not Reggie Ragland going out there to play outside linebacker because that's not his natural position. But he's going out there in more obvious run-stopping situations. The Chiefs don't play... I don't want to give Bob Sutton's defense an inaccurate summation here. I don't want to say they play positionless football, because that's not true. But there's a lot of piecing together of personnel that Bob Sutton does, the Chiefs do defensively, that you'll need to keep your eye on Sunday. So pay attention to the personnel groups if you're looking for something else to keep an eye on. Keep an eye on, is Ukeme Oligwe in there? Is Kevin Pierre-Lewis in there? Is Justin Houston going after the quarterback, or is he dropping back into coverage in one of those zone defenses? That's what I'm going to be keeping my eye on defensively. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier or not. I can't remember, but I wrote it down. Another key matchup to keep an eye on is whenever Keenan Allen goes over to Terrence Mitchell's side of the defense. According to Pro Football Focus, Terrence Mitchell has been targeted at a team-high 19 times this season, giving up 9 completions for 166 yards. I think that was the third most yards in the NFL off the top of my head. But he has the best cornerback versus quarterback rating. Whenever QBs are throwing at him, he's the best of the Chiefs starting corners between himself, Marcus Peters, and Philip Gaines. He's giving up a 78 quarterback rating whenever he's targeted, even though he's given up quite a few yards. I feel good about Terrence Mitchell. I've said this since he started looking like the guy last year. I told you his hamstring injury terrified me. It seems like that's not going to be a problem anymore. He hasn't missed any time since he actually got out on the field. He was a little bit rusty against New England, got back on his feet, got beat a couple of times against Philadelphia. The Chiefs are going to get beat occasionally in their defensive backfield. Every team does. That's always going to be something you're contending with. But A Peters, Mitchell, and Gaines in the slot defensive backfield with Ron Parker back there roaming, with Eric Murray back there roaming, with Daniel Sorensen being there to help support the run defense, that's a pretty good defensive backfield. In fact, without Eric Berry's name back there, it's actually it's kind of devoid of nationally recognizable players. I don't know if you went over to your average NFL fan and said, hey, tell me about this Chiefs defensive backfield, I'm not sure what they'd be able to give you. But from my perspective, I look at that backfield and say, you know what? I look at that secondary and say, that's a group of guys that gets this system, that plays into it very well, and that manages everything going on around them. I feel pretty good about Peters, Gaines, Mitchell, And then the group of safeties the Chiefs have going three deep, Ron Parker, Daniel Sorensen, Eric Murray, even with the loss of Eric Berry. But I'll be keeping an eye on where Keenan Allen lines up because he's the best receiver on this team. But as I touched on briefly yesterday, Keenan Allen's the guy that I'm afraid of. He's got 14 receptions for 135 yards and a touchdown so far this year. For comparison's sake, Tyreek Hill has 11 for 176. It's not a stupendous stat line for Keenan Allen through two games. He's efficient. He's effective. He catches the passes in his catch radius. I think that's going to be a matchup worth watching, not something worth being terrified of. The other guy, though, the guy who can really change this defense or this offense for the Chargers, can change the pace of this game, is Melvin Gordon. This is an extremely talented matchup of two young running backs in this game with Kareem Hunt and with Melvin Gordon. Melvin Gordon is kind of rising up the ranks a little bit as a guy with some star potential. Whenever he's healthy, he's really, really good. But I said this yesterday also. Again, for comparison, say Kareem Hunt has 30 carries for 229 yards and 3 touchdowns this year, the best in football. Melvin Gordon, on 3 fewer carries, 27, has 67 yards and a touchdown. He's not a dangerous, grinding running back, because he is. But he's not a guy that's been taking over the game so far this season for the Chargers. If the Chiefs can contain him, I will feel pretty good about what they're doing. He had only 9 carries for 13 yards against the Dolphins after having 18 carries for just 54 yards against the Broncos. He is containable, but he's very dangerous out of the backfield. Whenever he only got those 9 carries versus Miami last week in the game they lost on that last second field goal, he ended up getting 7 receptions for 65 yards. He's an extremely versatile, valuable weapon. But I think the Chiefs will be able to contain him relatively well. Also, kind of a counterpoint that RJ brought up on the Facebook live stream. He said the Chargers are not kicks away. They've had a lot of crap football that's led to them having to rely on kicks to even have a chance to win or tie their games. And that is true. I definitely don't want to get into the sports talk rabbit hole that is saying, if they just had a better kicker. I don't want to invite that conversation, because that's never how it works. Games don't get won or lost on one player very often in the NFL, and that's not the case with the Chargers either. But I do think it should show that they've been losing games by small margins. Lots of mistakes. Only putting up 17 points against Miami is not a very good look. Making Trevor Siemian look like John Elway isn't a very good look, but they've been close with these teams. I think they're on par with the Broncos and the Dolphins, a couple other teams that are in kind of the midsection of the NFL. I don't think any of those teams are Super Bowl contenders. I think all three of those teams are wild card contenders by the type of football they play, by their quality of their talent. I think those are all mid-range qualifiers, wild card contenders in this AFC. I don't think any of those teams are in the Patriots, Chiefs, Steelers, Raiders conversation in the AFC, for these are teams that can actually make it to a Super Bowl. So yeah, I don't want to say that this is because of they're 0-2 because of their kicker. That's not true. But I do think they're playing these kind of sloppy games in a way that I say, well, you know what, if they don't miss kicks that they should have made, if they don't get timid with the downfield passes, if their defense isn't getting picked apart by Trevor Siemian with some of the mistakes they've made, then they become a dangerous team. And this is where the Chargers always end up, frankly. The Chargers are always, oh, they're a dangerous team. If you catch the Chargers on a good day, they could beat anybody. And then also the Chargers could always lose to anybody. That's the dichotomy of the LA Chargers.
Isn't that everybody, though? Well, catch them on a good day, anybody can beat anybody.
That's,
except for, like, maybe Cleveland.
Well, no, Cleveland has that, too, now. Deshaun Kizer! If Deshaun Kizer has a good day,
okay,
they
fine,
catch the
Jets.
Steelers.
The Jets.
That's a good call.
Yeah, there we go.
But aren't the Jets and Browns playing this week?
They both lose.
Ooh, if Josh McCown has a couple of good plays, that Jets defense isn't too bad. You catch that Jets team on a good day.
Tie.
You're right.
They'll tie. They'll just tie.
But you're right, though. That's the That's the easiest possible analysis to give. That's always where the Chargers end up. The Chargers always end up in that purgatory of every week. You say, you know what? They could pull out this upset. Or you know what? They could be upset here in this game. No matter what the line is, no matter who their opponent is, there's always a chance. The Chargers are never a lock for anything ever. Which isn't the case for the Jets on this end and the Patriots on this end. You say this game is here. I'm never confident, maybe I can say it this way to say it better. I'm never confident in the Chargers ever. But they always give me some pause. Back to the Facebook Live comment section, which again, I think as I've mentioned, I think is a very good place for show audience interaction.
It gets me a lot of chuckles.
I wouldn't say that. I think I've been trying to keep an eye on it throughout the show. I think it's a very valuable place for good in-depth conversation where you can say, hey, here's my feeling. RJ's thing about, you know, the Chargers have played bad football. That's a good point. Something I got to spend some time on it and to kind of unpack. I think that's very good. I think it's a very good place for having really smart, intelligent sports conversations. Check out the comments again. Kristen says, hey, you got a package in the mail today. So sometimes I'm wrong.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Bananas and pajamas are coming down the stairs. Bananas and pajamas are coming down in pairs. Bananas and pajamas.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
Are chasing teddy bears. What? Welcome back to the show. Also from Facebook. Renee chimes in. I think adequately summarizes the show. This is breaking news. Local sports talk show politely invites critics to hell with him. Hop in or carpool. Carpool to hell. Next show name. Beards pointed something out during the break that we realized yesterday after we finished the show. We didn't even mention the fact that Mike Moustakas broke the home run record, the single season home run record for the Royals.
Thank God, by the way.
No kidding. Can you imagine?
It was really nerve-wracking there for about a week.
I hope he gets to 40 just so we can like have that done.
We did a post-game show like 2 weeks ago, and I think it was JD who calls in pretty frequently on Royals post-game, and he was like, Moose isn't going to homer for the rest of the year, is he?
I believed.
And we were both just like, yeah.
I believed, but I was afraid.
Oh, it was really scary.
So yeah, now I hope it gets to 40 so it's not just so sad. Still, like, so it's a better record.
A better record out of all of the ones that we're the bottom of,
yeah,
you mean?
Yeah. Also, the Royals won 1-0 last night. They won 15-5 the night before. Like, they're not going to make the playoffs, but they might get back to 500, and then all of my prognostication will be hilariously accurate, and I'm so excited for that. I love being right. NFL Network is doing something right now with like fantasy football lineups and like meh face emojis. It's just very, I don't like what's happening to the world currently. Like North Korea's mad, and NFL Network is using emojis. I just don't need that. I could have sworn I had another good Chiefs thing to talk about. Oh, I did. Here we go. Booyah. I was talking about the defense, and I forgot to mention that Jason Verrett, which could be pronounced Verrett, I don't really know. I should. I don't. Melvin Gordon was a limited participant on Thursday and limited today as well. And cornerback Jason Verrett is out for the second straight game with a knee injury. So that's going to be a place that the Chiefs can continue to test this Chargers defense as Trevor Williams starts in his place. Verrett out, Williams in. Good luck dealing with Tyreek Hill. I bet we're going to see a lot of Travis Kelce used as a wide receiver again in this game because of that. Not because of that necessarily, but also helped out by that factor. It's just going to be a matchup nightmare there for the Chargers to keep up with. Also, the Melvin Gordon thing is important, even if he does play. This is not just me saying, oh, we'll keep an eye, you know, if he doesn't play, that'd be big, because obviously. But even if Melvin Gordon does play on Sunday, this is something that I don't think I fully understood until last year. Seeing how different Spencer Ware was after his injury, seeing how different Dee Ford was with his injury, Melvin Gordon being limited in practice on Thursday and Friday is not going to make him be full steam ahead Melvin Gordon on Sunday. I think we're going to see him be struggling a little bit just because you're dealing with being banged up. Being a running back in the NFL is hard. These little nagging injuries can be supremely difficult for a running back to work through. So that's good news for the Chiefs defense, hopefully getting Melvin Gordon on a little bit of a slow day. I'm sure that this is all setting up for Beards to save this segment and then to play this back on Monday and the last week on, whenever I say this, after the Chiefs lose to the Chargers like 34-12. I don't know how they're going to score 12 exactly. It seems unlikely, but whenever the Chargers win 34-17, and then he'll play this back whenever I say, I feel pretty good about this game. I think the Chiefs should be able to handle this Chargers team all around. Again, I'm never fully confident in the Chargers on either side, in either direction. I'm never fully confident that they're going to fold to a better team. I'm never fully confident that they're going to beat a worse team. But I think this Chiefs front seven is going to handle Melvin Gordon well enough. I think they're going to hassle Phillip Rivers and make him whine a little bit. I think this offense is going to work around what the Chargers do have really, really well. I'm feeling pretty good about this game. In fact, I think I feel a little bit better about it than I did the Eagles game. And I had the Chiefs losing this game, by the way, before the season. I had the Chiefs starting this year 1-2 in their first three games. And so I said, you know, after they beat the Patriots, I said, I'll move it to 11-5. And now I'm expecting a 12-4 season because I think the Chiefs have maybe four losable games from here on out. But the Steelers are a different team on the road. So what happens whenever you see Pittsburgh coming to Arrowhead? You feel pretty good about that. And you're going to lose in Oakland on Thursday Night Football. It's a really, really hard game to win as a road team. We've seen a couple teams do it already this year, though. I'm super interested in how the season's going to unfold. And I'm trying not to look ahead too far. And I'm sure the Chiefs aren't looking past this game because divisional games are very important. Divisional games are always difficult. But I think the Chiefs have a lot of matchup advantages here. Marcus Peters is going to handle whoever's in front of him. This Chiefs defense seems well-equipped to deal with Melvin Gordon. Might be dealing with a little bit of an injury here. Chiefs offense seems well-equipped to maximize on everything in front of them defensively. I think the Chiefs are going to go to that soccer stadium and come out on top. I feel pretty confident in that. Whenever we come back, we'll talk about something else. Matt Derrick later on in the show here. Almost Entirely Sports.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City. You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports.
I think Cody Tapp's about to flash me. Oh, he was coming back for his ESPN Sports Center Kansas City time.
With Joshua Briscoe.
Hey, I'm sorry you had to find out this way, like with your like wife with another man, your time slot with another man, but we killed Sports Center Kansas City.
But it starts at 5.
On ESPN Kansas City.
That's a very funny joke that we had. But if you go to 1510.com, it says that SportsCenter Kansas City does, in fact, start at 5. Right now. But it doesn't. It doesn't exist anymore. This show exists now.
Welcome back. We staged a coup.
We did. The mutiny is complete. Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City. I did the last episode of SportsCenter Kansas City. Like, that was like one of Cody's babies. Also, if you go to 1510.com, it says that What's on Top, What's on Tap still exists. No in the Know, which is the current show that actually exists there. The station's weird, man. I really love pieces of how this works. Like, I don't know how like inside this is. But it's like ESPN Kansas City and Sports Radio 810 are both owned by Union Broadcasting. Like 810 is if you see the Facebook live video of the show, you can see like the glass behind me. The other side of that glass is the 810 studio. So we're definitely the redheaded stepchild, which I'm super cool with. I like that. Because this show is just an oddball. This show is an oddball, and I love that about it. But also sometimes it's like, oh, well, the website schedule's wrong. Can we get somebody on that or what? No? Okay. It's fun. I like how this show is developing. I like how this station is developing. Did you move the camera during the hour beards?
Nope. Same spot it was.
If I feel like it's very off center. I feel like there's a lot of space over on this side of me.
See, I'm taking an intro to broadcasting video class, and there's this thing called the rule of thirds.
Yeah, this isn't a painting, it's not bleep hole. It's a Facebook live stream. You should center the thing. Have you ever seen like a live cut-in? We were just talking about PTI just now. You know, just on PTI, Bomani was centered. Pablo was centered. I have NFL Network up right now. They're not shooting half of Maurice Jones-Drew's face. He's in the middle of the picture.
Well, in that case, then.
I'm guessing you just turned the camera on yourself. So I'm guessing it just happened.
Maybe.
Perfect.
I can rebel in little ways.
That's fine. Your silent protests, do whatever you want with them. But for, like, the wide shot of this, like, show as it's happening, it ought to be centered. That's all. Beard just shrugged at that. I said that and he shrugged. Just fix the camera. He's staring at the Maestro, which is the system we use to play, like, commercials and, like, audio.
Well, I'm not
going to
do it during the show.
I think you should. I think it would be very on brand if you just reached up right now and just, like, tried to finagle the camera
around.
Okay.
Hang on.
Oh, I think it just got worse.
Nope, there you go. It's centered.
It just felt off balance, you know? Just like a lot of window over my right shoulder. You put it exactly backward. Oh, okay. Slightly better. Still a disaster. Tagline of the show.
That was a great 4 minutes.
4 minutes in the hour. Perfect. Later on, we're going to have Matt Derrick on to talk about the Chiefs. And everything coming up with the Chiefs-Chargers game. And there's just weird stuff on Twitter happening right now. And I'm afraid of a lot of it. And I'm enticed by a lot of it. I feel like I need to leave it alone. The best thing for all of us is just to leave it alone. I'm also at this point now, like, I'm wondering what you still would want to know as a listener about this Chiefs-Chargers matchup that we haven't talked about yet. I think we've kind of broken down everything that's out there. Oh, I guess we could pivot to the rest of the division. That would make a lot of sense. That's what a good broadcaster would have done at this point. An excellent broadcaster even would have had like the schedule of games up already. Really, honestly, I should have just made it sound like that was the plan this whole time. But I literally just remember, like, oh yeah, I forgot I wanted to go through all the games this week because there's some very interesting things going on around the NFL. Instead, you got to listen to Beards fix a camera. But actually, there are a bunch of interesting games in the NFL this week. I really was planning on going through this slate of games. And now we get to do that. Look at that. We made it. Go team. I took the Rams last night. I think Jared Goff has been moving in the right direction. I expected them with Todd Gurley and Sammy Watkins to be better offensively, especially than the Niners. I did not expect it to be a 41-39 game. In fact, I know no one cares about anyone else's fantasy teams. But like, I went and picked up the Rams defense in a couple of places because I was like, well, short week, Niners stink. Let's start that defense. didn't go exactly according to plan. I think they did enough defensively to have like a decent game. Yeah, 2 points. Not great. Not my best move ever. But yeah, so that game was very surprising, but got that one right. Here's something extremely interesting. And I said there's some injury news that came out today about the Bills that I have to check on. But the Bills and Broncos are playing, and 94% of people on ESPN's Picks Can Pick 'em have taken the Broncos. And I get it, because last week at Carolina, the Bills put up 3 points in a 9-3 loss. And the Bills are in relative tank mode, right? They trade Sammy Watkins. He goes and explodes for the Rams. Marcell Dareus probably isn't going to play this week for the Bills. Their left tackle is probably not going to play this week. Gerald Worthy, defensive tackle, is probably not going to play this week. Actually, Dareus, Glenn, and Worthy, defensive tackle, left tackle, defensive tackle, are all not playing on Sunday versus Denver. And they're going to be young guys stepping in. I am extremely tempted to roll with Buffalo in this game. The 2-0 Broncos have had both of those wins come in Denver. I think Trevor Siemian is set for a setback. That offense, is, again, I think at its best, looks like a kind of a little bit of a decrepit Chiefs offense. I was shocked to see that the Bills had 6% of the popular vote, if you will, in this game. I think at this point, I think I'm just going to roll with Buffalo. I would not advise you to spend any money on that game. But I think that the Broncos are poised for a letdown. I think that they're going to drop this game and plummet in the power rankings that overreact in every possible direction. There's a really good chance that the Broncos defense is just going to maul Terrell Pryor and LeSean McCoy all day long, and I get it. I couldn't name you a handful of the weapons on that Buffalo team. But that's my big upset this week, that if I had to take an upset, that's where I'd put it. And I'm going to take that upset in my Pigskin Pick'em pool. The Ravens at the Jags, not nearly as interesting. Again, advantage always goes to the home team. There are a lot of games this week where I would like to take, or I'm going to end up taking the road team in a way that makes me feel not supremely confident. But I think the Ravens on the road at Jacksonville will be just fine. Falcons at Lions in a similar matchup. I don't believe in what we've seen from Detroit. They handled the Giants on Monday night. Big whoop. I think the Falcons are really, really good. I think they're appropriately in the top three of every single set of power rankings, which are arbitrary, by the way. But I think they're a top three NFL team at this point. I think they will win in a difficult game on the road against another 2-0 team, a team that has some offensive potential. But I will pass on the Detroit Lions being something to be incredibly fearful of. I like Atlanta on the road. I already told you that I'm taking Buffalo at home against the Broncos in what looks like one of the most lopsided games of the week, which surprises me in a big way. Steelers at Bears. The Steelers are a different team on the road. I don't know what that betting line is, but I'm guessing that the Bears are going to be a super huge underdog, and I would not have the guts to go take the Steelers against the spread because that offense is just always different on the road. But I think they're going to definitely handle Mike Glennon. I think that's going to be a win for the Steelers. The other team in the AFC, as I like to call them, will be moving to 3-0. Cleveland and Indianapolis, a couple of 0-2 teams. I'm just going to take the home team. I think the Browns are better. I think they have more to fear on defense. And actually, you know what? Bleep it. I'll take the Browns on the road. Sure. Great. That's gonna make me feel super smart. What's the spread for the Steelers-Bears game, Beards?
7.5 from Bleacher Report.
Wow, okay. That's so much less than I thought it was going to be. I would have thought it was going to be closer to 12.
That's what it opened as.
12.5. Holy smokes. Okay, well, that's tempting. I would still stay away from that because I think the Steelers are always different on the road. I don't think the Browns really care where they're playing. I think DeShone Kizer has the advantage over Jacoby Brissett. I think that Colts team is just as bad as that Browns team is without Andrew Luck on it. The talent levels there are miles apart from being a contending team. So I'm going to go ahead and just roll with Cleveland on the road there because I'm an idiot. I'm guessing that Myles Garrett's healthy again, right? Let's find out for me if Myles Garrett is playing for Cleveland this week. Dolphins and Jets. The Jets are terrible, and they're at home against a beatable team, but I think the Dolphins will be fine there. Jay Cutler will whoop the ball around, and I feel pretty good about it. Bucks at Vikings. The Buccaneers have the popular vote here because the Vikings are going to be trotting out Case Keenum. I don't have a huge, huge confidence in Tampa Bay. I have so much less than zero confidence in Case Keenum, so I'll take the Bucks there. Myles Garrett news?
From scout.com, Garrett was seen in the locker room, and the coach says he's close to returning. He was on a stationary bike the other day. He was in a walking boot as well. So, no is the answer.
He's doubtful. Dang it.
After practice on Wednesday, Hugh Jackson was asked how close Garrett was to returning. Close.
It said he's doubtful, though. I'm going back to the Colts, and no one should watch that game. Don't watch that game. Even if you're a Colts or Browns fan. Do something else. Texans and Patriots. The Patriots are going to win. Saints and Panthers.
Analysis.
Thank you. Saints and Panthers. An 0-2 team versus a 2-0 team, but it's an 0-2 that I don't really totally buy, and it's a 2-0 that I don't totally buy, but it's in Carolina. So I think the Panthers will manage to score at least 9 points, which is what they needed last week to win. I'll take Carolina in that game. Eagles have the Giants in Philadelphia. We've seen the Eagles. I think they're a much better team than the Giants are. The Giants haven't scored 20 points in, what, 8 consecutive weeks or something at this point? If it is 8, make it 9. I think they're going to have a hard time scoring against Philadelphia in Philly. Seahawks at Titans might be the most interesting game of the week. They kick off at 3:05 local time. The Seahawks and Titans are both 1-1. The Seahawks are a team that get talked about as a Super Bowl contender perennially now. The Titans were kind of a sexy pick in the preseason. They ended up getting beat by the Raiders back in week one, won in week two. It's in Tennessee, though, for the sloppiness we've seen from Seattle. Again, I'm assuming that the Titans, even at home, are an underdog, and if that's the case, I'm going to roll with an upset here. I'm very interested in what the Titans are going to bring to that matchup, so I'll take Tennessee at home, even though I think the Titans are generally a little overrated. I'm not buying into what the Seahawks have shown. I think they're going to struggle on the road here. Bengals and Packers. The Packers are going to win by 45 points. Raiders at Washington is the Sunday night game. This is going to be fascinating. I'm very, very much looking forward to this game because the Raiders get talked about as a Super Bowl contender more than the Chiefs do, which I think can be largely silly at this point, because what exactly have they shown you that the Chiefs haven't shown you? That the Chiefs have the most impressive resume in football. Why do the Raiders get the benefit of the doubt? I've walked myself in a circle. I almost said the Rams. We're done talking about the Rams, hopefully forever. Washington ended up losing to the Eagles back in week one and then won at the Rams. There we go. That's where the Rams are coming back up for me. And only by a touchdown, but the Rams looked like a pretty good offense last night. They gave up 20 points to LA in that game in DC. Washington's going to have a really interesting chance on primetime television to deal with the Raiders, but I think that the Raiders offensively are going to be able to do enough to beat Washington, but boy, I'll be rooting very hard to see the Raiders take the L there on Sunday Night Football. We're really looking forward to that game. And then on Monday night, it's Cowboys at Cardinals, a couple of teams that have really been struggling lately. No David Johnson makes me think that the Cardinals are going to have a rough time, but I'm taking a bunch of upsets this week, not because I'm trying to take upsets, but because that's what's showing up in front of me. I like the Cardinals in this game a little bit better. Ezekiel Elliott last week was completely shut down. That entire Cowboys offense looked abysmal. And defensively, they gave up 42 points to Trevor Siemian. They barely skirted by the Giants, who look horrendous. Barely is unfair. They only scored 19 points against the Giants, who look horrendous. The Cowboys are having a little bit of an offensive regression this year, it sure seems like to me. So I think I'll go ahead and roll with the Cardinals there in a Monday night game that probably won't be worth your time. It's a couple of NFC teams that I just don't see where they're going at this point. But the rest of the AFC West is fascinating. Obviously, the Chiefs and Chargers face-off, and if I haven't made it official yet, I'm taking the Chiefs in that game. I said 27-20 last week. I think this is going to be a pretty similar game. Maybe it's 27-17 because of a late score for the Chiefs. I can't differentiate much between 27-17 and 27-24. The spread, again, is not something that I'm going to be touching in this matchup. But I think the Chiefs are favored for a reason. I think we'll have the advantages here. Last week I said it would be a late score that would bring the game to the 27-20 score that made it seem closer than it actually would be. Dead on there. I feel like it's going to be something similar here. So I can say 27-24 without thinking this game's going to be a terrible nail-biter. So I'll go ahead and roll in that direction. I feel pretty good about what's going on with Chiefs-Chargers. But Oakland and Washington is going to be fascinating. And Denver at Buffalo is also going to be a very interesting game, I think, between a couple of relatively evenly matched teams. A team that's been overinflated by their two home games, looking pretty good with the Broncos, and against the Bills team that has more talent, even though they have been shipping out pieces, has more talent than I think that their recent reputation has shown. So I'm pretty interested in this week of NFL games, especially around the rest of the division. Was that sportsy enough for a bunch of you? You angry, angry sports people. Oh, yeah, I have to keep talking. That was a very long silence. It's interesting, man. Sometimes, like, the first, like an hour of Friday shows are my favorite thing, because you get to actually, like, look ahead to a game and eventually, like, well, what else can I say that won't be repetitive? What else can I talk about that I haven't said already? I think D Ford's a liability in the run game. Perfect. How cool and original of me. I don't know if I mentioned yet, actually, the Chiefs are the best at average yards per play in the league. They're averaging 7.6 yards per play. Oakland's averaging 6.5, and Atlanta's averaging 6.5. Those are two teams that everyone believes are definite, real, high-powered, high-octane offenses, and the Chiefs haven't really gotten that treatment yet. And frankly, I have my reservations about if the Chiefs should get that treatment yet. I thought that was pretty interesting, because they are a full yard better than the two high-powered, high-octane offenses that everybody thinks so highly of.
That's a body of work thing, though.
It is, for sure, because you look at what Alex Smith's offenses have done in the past, but you also look at who the Chiefs have done it against this year, against a very talented Eagles front seven, against Bill Belichick's Patriots defense. The body of work is the reasoning, but the Raiders had a high-powered offense, quote-unquote, last year, largely spurred on by how bad their defense was. They kept getting the ball back, so they had more time with the ball. They averaged an extra drive per game last year than anybody else because of the fact that their defense was getting on and off the field very quickly by letting their opponents score. So I agree with you, but I think that's a very telling statistic that I think the Chiefs obviously have to want to keep up at the top of the league in, because that's going to show you what this offense is actually capable of. But you're right, that's true. Also, a couple other stats here. Alex Smith is 5-1 with a 103.1 passer rating versus the Chargers since coming to Kansas City in 2013, winning five straight games. This Chargers team is very different right now than what it was in 2013. So I you can't tie those all together, but it's kind of a fun stat. Something to maybe give you a little boost of optimism if you're having some concern about the Chargers, although I don't think many Chiefs fans are. I think at this point, more fans ought to be trying to talk themselves into them being dangerous rather than talking themselves into being a pushover. This is something back to this year, though, that plays into that yards per play stat a little bit. Through two games this year when the Chiefs have trailed, Alex Smith has completed 89% of his passes for four touchdowns, no picks, in 11.82 yards per attempt. That is unbelievable. That is stunning. Having Alex Smith be a guy who can get you almost 12 yards per attempt while you're behind in a game is not something I ever expected to get from Alex Smith, and I am all about it. All right, we're going to take a break. Whenever we come back, we're going to get a hold of Matt Derrick and see what he's feeling like whenever it comes to this Chiefs-Chargers game. Also, last segment of the show, we're going to fix football. Talk about that next.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Prepare to be disappointed.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
Welcome back to Almost Entirely Sports here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, 1510.com. We're live on the ESPN Kansas City Facebook page, on the podcast everywhere. If we're not omnipresent, we're close. Ever-present. Relentlessly present. I think the goal at this point is to make this show so easy to find that you have to avoid it on purpose to not end up seeing or hearing part of it.
But of course, we don't want you to avoid it.
Right, yeah, don't avoid it. But if you want to not hear it...
It'll be like a McDonald's.
That's perfect.
At every corner.
That's perfect. And also, we're going to kill thousands of people every year by heart disease. I don't think a radio show can give you heart disease. I think maybe we could stress people out. Someone may make people so mad they would like literally die. I don't want this show to kill anybody.
Or it's funny enough that you die by laughter.
Be realistic, please.
Nope, that has happened. There has been a movie that somebody died while laughing.
No.
Yes.
No, Beards, that's not what
I
meant.
Oh, you mean we're not that funny?
I meant be realistic, like this show could make somebody laugh that hard.
Well, now I feel foolish.
We're now joined by Matt Derrick of ChiefsDigest.com. He's at Matt Derrick on Twitter. Matt, just curious if you think the Chargers are going to find some ridiculously heartbreaking way to lose this week to the Chiefs, and if so, how?
It seems to be the most likely scenario because right. That's what the Chargers do. But, I really think there's enough separation between these two teams. I think the Chiefs will win, but I do expect that it's going to be probably a little bit closer than we think. And, you know, it always seems like the Chiefs, just like we ended up in that scenario after the onside kick on last Sunday and everything. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't surprise me if the Chargers had the ball at the end with a chance to do something, but just don't quite get there.
They always do. That's Philip Rivers lives in that purgatory. He always has the ball on his own 25 with a minute and 30 seconds left, no timeouts, down by five. Every single week that happens.
And the crazy thing is that, you know, a lot of people like to try and, you know, blame it on him and say, you know, hey, he's always going to turn the ball over late. This season, it's not been his fault.
No.
I'm not sure it's been his fault the last couple of years. This year, it's really been they can't run the ball. It's been all up to him. And, you know, Melvin Gordon's banged up now. So, you know, I think that's going to be even more troubles for the Chargers trying to run the ball. But he's done everything he can, and I keep saying if Cairo Santos were the kicker of the San Diego or Los Angeles Chargers, how many times am I going to say San Diego this week? If he were the kicker, they'd be probably at least 1-1, probably 2-0.
Yeah, and I think that's so interesting, the fact that they're a team that seems so snake-bitten, even though I don't think that's an actual thing. And now it's like these losses come on last-second kicks by a kicker who had nothing to do with the Chargers until 2 weeks ago, essentially. Like, It's bizarre. You mentioned Melvin Gordon and him being banged up. We talked about him a little bit earlier on in today's show. The one matchup that's not a direct matchup, I suppose, but something I'm going to be keeping my eye on is Melvin Gordon versus Dee Ford. Because whenever the ball gets run in Dee Ford's direction, the defense usually loses. What have you seen from Dee Ford this year throughout his career? And the way that he just seems to always be on the losing end of those battles between himself and a run game.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that almost goes back to his rookie season. You know, it's something we've just seen from the very beginning that he's just always struggled against the run. And I'm never sure that it's even been a thing that he even reads it really well. Mm-hmm. And he's a pass rusher. And that's what he does really, really well. And I don't know if it's just a matter that he just, you know, sells out against the pass too much and gets himself into some bad positions. If it's just, you know, looking at his numbers and everything, it's just never been a strength of his. He's just purely a pass rush guy, and some guys are like that, and that's definitely the way to go. I mean, especially this season, you don't really running at Justin Houston,
right?
And I don't think you've got a lot of success running up the middle. But I think it is going to be kind of dependent on this Chiefs season and how they are able to kind of rotate their run defense a bit to give Ford some help over there on that side.
Well, that was my next thought. My next question is, how do you think they will try to amend that spot? Because it feels like one of the few ways this defense has a deficiency is it has a deficiency whenever teams can run the ball behind their left tackle to Ford's side. A couple of things we've kicked around here is, one, seeing more Tano Passanio getting some more snaps and kind of obvious run situations, which he hasn't yet so far this year. And also, it looks like Reggie Ragland might be getting his Chiefs debut this week. Do either of those things tickle your fancy?
think they definitely have possibilities because Ragland is definitely a run thumper. I mean, that's what he's built for, and that's what he can do. And I think they are kind of, I think the Chiefs are kind of leaning in that direction because, you know, when we talked to Brett Veach about, you know, the kind of plans for Ragland and everything, I mean, they definitely had a long-term strategy, which was they want to bring him back in slowly and everything and work him back in. But they're really targeting the second half of the season where he would really kind of make an impact. And so I, you know, if it's this Sunday or next Sunday that we see Ragland get back onto the field and kind of get his feet wet, I think they're going to bring him back in slowly. I mean, it's going to be kind of a gradual process. But, you know, if they're building to the idea that by the end of the season and heading into the playoffs that Ragland is kind of their big run defender on that side, I could definitely see them going in that direction. I think they're also kind of just trying to figure out, you know, their way through without Eric Berry, because he's another big part of that run defense, especially on that side of the field. And you know, and Daniel Sorensen and Eric Murray, they're not Eric Berry when it comes to playing the run. So I think they're still trying to figure out how, you know, to best play those guys and how to shore up that side of the defense against the run.
Let's go to the Tana Pastore thing briefly then, because I was a little bit surprised to see Ragland not mentioned in the guys that are on the injury report for tomorrow, because he's not on the report at all, right? Did I get that correct?
Nope, he's not. Yeah, he's okay. Not. He practiced in full the last couple of days, and they did not give him a designation.
So that surprised me, but hearing you say that you're still expecting them to sort of ease him in, I'm good with, because I think if they've got a long-term plan, they shouldn't be worrying about getting him in the rotation now, so that's good. But Tano Pastore hasn't taken a defensive snap so far this year, which surprises me just because he's kind of a freakish athlete, and you can always use more of those on the field. What do you think the long-term plan is for him right now?
You know, it's really kind of hard to tell because I think that we all kind of expected that he would get a little bit more play. But I think it's been a couple of situations that they have found themselves in that's kind of leaned that away from that direction. One is that they really just, you know, it was like a basketball team playing with a short bench against the Patriots. They really didn't substitute in and out against the Patriots. They went with their starters. They went with their front line. And really didn't play that many reserves. I think six guys in the defense played all the snaps. And there would have been, I think, seven with Berry if he hadn't gotten hurt.
Right.
So, you know, they really just did not mix people in and out. And it's where they end up playing Pastore, because it looks like at this point they consider him a linebacker. And that's where they're going to be bringing him in and everything. And I think, obviously they want Houston out there as much as they can. He's healthy, so you're not going to see him coming off the field that much. They've ended up in a lot of situations against the Eagles and the Patriots where they're playing a lot of pass rush, pass defense, so that's what kind of favors Ford in that sense. You're right. I mean, I think there's a possibility that we might end up seeing more of Pastore once they start getting into some teams that run the ball a little bit more and they don't have to worry about that. Maybe we'll get to see a little bit more. But, you know, he's still kind of their fourth option because, in run situations, I think you're probably going to see Frank Zondo a little bit more. But it's really going to be, I think at this point, just how much they want to spell these guys. And at this point, they haven't shown any willingness or interest in giving Justin Houston a break.
Right.
So whether that just changes as the schedule changes, you know, maybe they get some, get some leads and they feel like they can get the young guys some play, because there's some others. Kimi Legwe is kind of in that spot too. I think that we thought we might see a little bit more of him, but have not seen the rookies yet, really, on defense.
You mentioned Justin Houston, and this is something that Bob Sutton addressed yesterday, I think it was, in his availability. Justin Houston's been used, I think, really interestingly so far this year, especially because it seems like there's been a pretty clear changing of usages at halftime for Houston these first 2 weeks. The Chiefs spent a lot of time dropping eight to deal with Tom Brady, and the defense got much more aggressive in the pass rush in the second half. A little bit of a similar story, it seemed like, against the Eagles, where Houston spent a lot of time dropping back, got a little more aggressive in the second half. Sutton said that, you know, you don't want to ever have a guy who always does something or never does something, because it makes the opponent's job a little bit easier, never having to worry about the versatility. But what have you seen in the way that this defense has used Justin Houston, and would you have any issue with maybe having him getting after the quarterback a little more, a little earlier?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And I think it is obviously a little bit's been dictated by situation, and I think that there's definitely an argument to be made that maybe they kind of turned up the heat on the Eagles a little bit late. They had kind of, I think, taken an approach maybe in the first half that maybe they could have put themselves in a little bit better position. But He's absolutely right. I mean, you don't want to get yourself in this situation where you're really, you know, favoring one way or the other, and you're just becoming too predictable and everything. But you know, at the same time, with Justin Houston, I'm not even sure as far as an all around linebacker play. Even when we last saw him healthy in 2014, I'm not even sure if he was, you know, playing at the level that he is right now.
I agree.
He was a pure pass rusher. I mean, and obviously 22 sacks that year. It's hard to say that he's better than that. But first two games, I think we have seen a better Justin Houston, because he's always been a pretty solid all-around linebacker. But now he seems to have taken the other parts of his game to a different level this season. I don't know if that's just, you know, being healthy, if it's just experience, if it's just what he's kind of learned the last couple of years, but he seems to be a lot more well-rounded than I think he was three seasons ago.
I would agree with that, and I don't want to just walk you into a hyperbole here. So genuinely, I'm curious what you would say to this. How much can that well-rounded Justin Houston mean to this defense? How high is the ceiling of this defense because of the presence that Justin Houston's going to have at his spot?
I hate to get into too much hyperbole,
right,
but I'll go ahead and take the bait and say it. I think this defense, especially now without Barry, is completely dependent on Justin Houston.
That's right.
We're still seeing the old bend but don't break defense of Bob Sutton. It's what he does. It's what we're going to see. And there are some benefits to that. I mean, you know, there's definitely benefits of having a defense that can keeps guys out of the end zone, even if they give up a lot of yards. And this team does give up some yards, and I don't think that we should ever expect anything less than that Bob Sutton's defense is going to give up yards. But it's all about giving up points. And at this point, I think that Justin Houston is definitely the catalyst for a lot of what they want to do on defense. And without him, I don't think Chris Jones gets three sacks last week. He certainly doesn't get an interception.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and there's some run plays that I think that we can say that last year would have gone for 15, 28, 31 yards downfield that Justin Houston's affecting this year. Yeah, 'cause we're not seeing the same kind of we're seeing the small plays, but last year this team got gashed with some big runs. And so far we're not seeing that. And I think Justin Houston's the reason why.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I want to come back to the Chiefs and Chargers here in a second, but I want to look over to the AFC West, the other two teams, because they're both in pretty interesting matchups this week. Can I interest you in the Bills at home against the Broncos, or in Washington at home against the Raiders on Sunday Night Football this week?
Oh, man. Those are some favorable matchups, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, Buffalo should, you would think, be a win for pretty much everybody in the division, except, you know, the Chargers, I'm sure, will find a way to make it interesting.
Right.
But, yeah, it'd be a really, you know, we're going to get a good kind of measure here with the Raiders and the Redskins for the next couple of weeks, and the Chiefs will be seeing them on Monday Night Football here in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, I mean, that'll be a good barometer. But, yeah, I would expect that we'd have a couple of, well, three 3-0 teams at the end of this. Mm.
I think if I could get a bet to say one of those two AFC West teams would drop a game, I would take that. I'm picking against the Broncos this week because I feel like they're going to be a very optically different team outside of Sports Authority Mile High Field on mountaintop.com, whatever their stadium is actually called at this point. I think they're going to be very different away from home, and I want to say the same thing about Oakland, but I think they'll be able to handle Washington. I think those are two very interesting games I'm excited for, but we'll come back to Chiefs-Chargers. On the offensive side of the ball for the Chiefs, what's going to be the most important thing specifically in this matchup?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, you know, how they really adjust to the loss of Mitch Morse. I think they're going to be able to handle that pretty well because they've got a lot of experience playing with Zach Fulton in some different spots the last couple of years. Yeah. And Fulton's a solid backup. I don't think that he's, you know, quite has the versatility, and he's got some different strengths than Morse does. So they may have to kind of run things a little bit differently. But, you know, that's an important position, I mean, especially in this offense. I mean, Mitch Morse is responsible for making a lot of the calls. a lot of the blocking assignments and everything like that at the line. And obviously he's got a great relationship with Alex Smith, so, and they're very comfortable together. So I think that's the big thing to watch. If as long as Fulton can kind of step in there and they don't miss a beat, I think that's obviously, you know, the best thing you could hope for. Other than that, you gotta stop Joey Bosa. I mean, that's the biggest thing you gotta look for on the Chargers side. If he's able, he's their most disruptive force, especially with some of the injuries that they've got. Jason Verrett's out again. That's who they're going to rely on. So if you can keep Bosa from causing too much problems in the backfield, then you're gonna be in pretty good shape.
There's a conversation on Twitter earlier today about Andy Reid and his sort of ingenuity and his weapons he has now. And there's kind of a not conflicting schools of thought necessarily, but I'm curious where you land on this. Maybe there's an idea that Andy Reid is sort of taking his game to a next level. Maybe on the other side of the coin, it's just that Andy Reid has been doing this for his entire time in the NFL, but he currently has the best set of weapons that he's ever had. From what you've seen from Andy Reid, from the tape of this offense, is he doing things better or differently, or is he just now doing it finally with sort of the fine dining ingredients that he's been looking for in his time in the NFL?
I think you can definitely make a case for that. That just all around, he's got the best set of tools he's had in Kansas City since he's been here, and he's got a lot of speed. And so far, all the game plans that we've seen, and even what we saw, I think, in the kind of leading up to the season, in the preseason and training camp and off-season workouts, everything's been built around the idea of how do you get these guys with a lot of speed and size, the football. But I will preface this by saying that I could be a complete idiot and that Andy Reid has forgotten more about football than I will ever know. Mm-hmm. But I felt all of last season that oftentimes Andy was trying to be almost too smart.
Yes.
That every single game he was looking at, really trying to pick out what the opposing defense didn't do well and try to exploit that, which that makes sense. But what I think they got into is that they got into so many scenarios where he's like, okay, the Tampa Bay defense falls for this every single time, so we're going to run that.
Right.
Well, Tampa Bay defense knows that too, so I think that, they're making those adjustments. This year, I feel like rather than trying to just merely attack the opposing defense's weaknesses, he's just saying, this is what we do well, we're going to do it. And doesn't matter what the defense is. It doesn't matter, what's coming. He's, I think, creating game plans that's designed to maximize what the Chiefs do best. And one of the things that I think that they do best is this option-type offense where you're going to see a lot of plays that look exactly the same, but it's choose your own adventure. I mean, they could go 16 different ways with it. And that Kelce shovel pass for the touchdown, I think, is a great example. I mean, we've already seen that exact same play a couple of times, and they always do something a little bit different. And you can run that play all season long, and a defense is not necessarily ever going to know where the ball is going, and I'm not sure how you defend it.
I think you're dead on. I think that, I think that's a great way of looking at it. All right, Matt, we're get you out of here on this. Give me how you think this game unfolds and a matchup for everybody to keep an eye on.
Well, obviously, I think both offenses are moving along pretty well. I think the Chiefs, I think, do have the advantage here. And until anybody in the AFC West can knock them off, I think you got to go with them for the win. Chargers, they're going to score some points. Unless they can get a ground game growing, I think it's going to be tough for them to find a way to win this ball game. So I'm going Chiefs 31-24. I think we're going to continue to see a lot of offense. But until somebody slows down the Chiefs, I think they're going to continue to pile up points.
I agree. Matt, as always, I appreciate it.
As always, good talking to you, man.
It's good to hear from Matt. Matt Derrick of ChiefsDigest.com is at Matt Derrick on Twitter. He said, Andy Reid's probably forgotten more about football than he's ever known. Matt also has probably forgotten more about football than I've ever known. It's a good well of knowledge to dive deep into. I'm not sure I loved how that sounded. Matt Derrick, ChiefsEdges.com. Whenever we come back, we will dismount on the work week, and Beards and I will fix the NFL.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Beards is extraordinarily talented. He's gonna mark me saying that he's extraordinarily talented, and then will not provide the context later on. That's fine. Whatever you got to do to get through your day, Beards.
On 1510 AM, 99.3 FM, and 1510.com.
Beards is extraordinarily talented.
And so humble.
And also the worst. The very worst. Wrapping up the week. I feel like it's been kind of a long week. Is that reasonable?
It feels like it.
Is that you making fun of working with me?
No, okay. I'm sleepy as can be.
Yeah, like it just sort of feels like it's been a long week. It's not, there's no complaining.
I like how you said that we're going to wrap up the end of the work week when I have three more days.
That's true. Yeah. And I'm off tomorrow. I'm going to the Renaissance Festival tomorrow.
Ooh, fun.
Yeah. Very excited. I think I could pass in the Renaissance. Yeah, it just feels like it's been a long week. I don't know why. That insightful and interesting and good radio? Very good. So as we dismount here, what I told you, 27-24 Chiefs over the Chargers. I think they win this game, but control along the way. Late score. You know, Chargers try to get back into it. They'd screw up an onside kick at the end, something like that. But I feel pretty good about this game. I also don't want to take Chargers for granted. But a little bit of a different thing here these last few minutes. Le Batard's been talking about the aesthetic problem that the NFL has. There's a lot of teams playing scared football. There's a lot of quarterbacks throwing the ball 3, 4, 5 yards at a time. Coaches who just want their quarterback to control everything. Just say, listen, don't turn the ball over, pick up 4 yards at a time. And it's generally smart football. It's just not very fun, aesthetic football to watch. And so then there was a poll question that Le Batard Show put out that said, what if you lost a point every time you punted? And I think this is my favorite idea for how we can make football better. Because you would have more aggressive plays on first and second down. Because you don't ever want to get to those fourth down conversions because you're going to have to go for them. So then you get more aggressive plays on first and second down. You get way more fourth down conversion attempts. If you're beyond the 50, you have to go for it. Not by rule, but obviously. If you're past your own 40, you almost certainly have to just go for it. If you're past your own 30 and it's within 10 yards, maybe you go for it. You have to say, is it worth a point, a guaranteed point, to pick up 40 or 50 yards of field position? It's going to be worth it if you're within your own 10 or whatever. But I like this idea. And Mike, you know, whenever it gets slow, they try to fix baseball. I think getting ahead of the curve on making football more aesthetically pleasing. Get some riskier stuff out there. I think that's our new niche. Beard has nothing to add to this conversation. I'm thinking.
It's not a terrible idea as far as ideas go.
No, it's not. Like, there are worse ideas. There was another one. Make it 15 yards every time. It's first and 15. No, it's no more 10 yards for a first down. It takes 15 yards to get a first down. So it inspires more downfield plays, more risky plays. That eliminates your 3-yard run and then your 4-yard pass and then your 4-yard run to get a first down. No, it's not enough anymore. You're trying to pick up 10 on your first down pass at least, even if you're still a scared team with a scared quarterback and a scared head coach. I think we can fix football. I think we can save football.
It's definitely better than the 4-point line for NBA, I think.
Well, yeah, and the NBA doesn't need it right now. Now, the NBA season is pretty long, and it has a problem
and
with
it's starting
like,
early now.
It has a problem with bad teams. Like being a Suns fan, I'm not gonna make a.
Oh, they signed the number one pick from like 2 years ago, Anthony Bennett. You know, like one of the worst number one picks ever. How excited are you?
They also signed Alex Lynn again. They brought him. They brought.
He still exists.
Yeah, I mean, they also have worse uniforms now, which is very exciting. But if you're rooting for a bad NBA team, you're not gonna schedule 82 appointments to watch it. The NFL, you're always gonna get your 16 games. You're always going to schedule your appointment there, but I thought it was really interesting when, again, like last Thursday night was a surprise. Last night was a surprise aesthetically. But if you're out there getting Jags-Rams on Thursday Night Football, the game becomes regional, and that's baseball's problem. Baseball's problem is that it's a regional sport now. The only people that care about the Royals are in Kansas City. The only people that care about the Reds are in Cincinnati. It's a regional sport pushed on by regional fan bases. If the NFL continues to have an aesthetic problem, then more and more so, the NFL is in danger of being a regional sport. The fact that Sunday Night Football, Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, the Red Zone Channel, are the fact that those are all national draws are why the NFL is so obsessively powerful. So I think that's an interesting development to keep your eye on for a little while. All right, Chiefs-Chargers are coming on Sunday. I think the Chiefs handle L.A., something we're also having a hard time keeping up with. But it's going to be continually a battle where Philip Rivers at the end will be in football purgatory, having to go 82 yards in a minute and a half with no timeouts. Chiefs win. That's how it ends. Bye, Mom.
You're listening to Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe on ESPN Kansas City.